Yeah, whoa, that was good. Very tasty. Are you
that
here,
was
Michael?
Groovy.
yeah, it was groovy. Are you here, Michael? Yes, you're here. Your buddy wrote in. Somebody says, Rob, this is somebody named Rob in Denver, says, Michael, thank you for posting your note. Just drop it in. What note is that?
I have no idea, Bob. Maybe it's another
What's on Ginny's site, Bob? Oh, what we talked about.
Michael didn't do it. This Michael didn't do it. Michael doesn't know anything about just dropping in. Do you, Michael? Did you write that?
No, I don't. Maybe he's talking about something else. But if it's something that happened in the last few moments, then I declare that I'm not involved.
Oh, okay. It could be another Michael.
Yes.
If it says, Michael, thank you for posting your note, wouldn't it be about Michael posting on Ginny's site the ayahuasca versus RNA drops?
No, he's titling the note Just Dropping In. That's the name of the note. Some article or something called Just Dropping In.
Okay.
But Michael, he's not competent, though. He doesn't live in the present anymore. He just did his whack job.
He had 3 hours of sleep, and he's only now just made his breakfast during the break.
Yeah, I gave him a good ion break so he could get his breakfast. So we expect a lot in this hour from you, Michael. We're going to do the ESP, or telepathy issue, that George wanted. But just to finish this note, it's a nice note. This guy says, I'm 2 weeks into the drops and loving it. He could be talking about Michael, who lives out in Denver, but anyways, forget that, I guess. I'm 2 weeks into the drops and loving it. I was shocked when I first read that you were endorsing a product. See, that would be you, Michael, right?
Yes, Bob.
Yeah.
Well, that's where you wrote the Just Dropping In, a couple weeks ago.
Okay, now I know exactly what he's talking about. That's the title of the piece I wrote for the website about the RNA drops.
Right, because you had not been there for a long time, hadn't posted anything in years, and you didn't want to really start it up again, so you just said, I'm just dropping in. Right?
Which also means I'm leaving immediately.
yeah, that's right.
Hit and run.
But that's right, but Rob, I remember Michael telling me that some of his fans, whatever, would be shocked that you were endorsing a product, and this guy was shocked. I mean, you have a certain profile that you have established that you violated. And so this guy says, and I thought Bob, what's that based on?
Keen observation.
Yeah, what's he based on? He read a note about RNA drops and shocked. Did he go over and look me up?
Yeah.
Did you mention me in that note? Man, do you blame everything on me? Michael, do you mention me? Michael,
no, there's no blame there. There's just open invitations, and then I fled the building.
To what?
There's no blame, just open invitations. I said if people want to come and hear someone who's present, they should come and tune into your radio program.
Oh, so he probably, I guess he did, and he concluded after whatever experience, I was a nutbag. And then he said,
isn't the term supposed to be nut job?
Yes, but this is a guy from Denver.
Okay,
so then he says, now he's changed. He goes through a change.
Oh.
But now I see Bob's a nutmeg with a purpose. And then he says, up both your new age asses. Up both your new age. We ain't new agers.
No.
We're old agers, as Ion used to say. Very old. We go way back. And then Rob writes in from Denver, says, Michael, it's on your presence process site. Yes, this is where you dropped in a couple weeks ago, broke all rules, and announced that you were a new person, and then got the hell out of there. And you predicted they'd be shocked, and they were. Okay, so that's that. And
well, actually, that's like me. You know, I've never endorsed or made a product in 40 years, and I joke about how, yeah, people are waiting on the sidelines for 40 years, and finally they'll be able to say, I knew Dr. Dean would finally sell out and start going commercial.
That's who they were. Yes.
Just like Michael.
And you did that, so you had to go through that.
Someone actually emailed me, Bob, this week and said they thanked me for not going commercial. And my reply to them was, I've never refused money sent to me, so I can't claim to being not commercial. I just didn't become a commercial.
Right. And And did you tell the person you were sort of commercial now?
Well, now I don't care.
Yeah, you don't care. Good. All right, so Madeline says, wow, amazing version of this song. Digging this, Bob. I'm assuming it's Diana Krall, Walk On By. Yeah, it's incredible. You can see she's got something extra in what she does. That's why she's so popular, you know. Mm-hmm. What do you think of her, Michael? Are you noticing her? Thinking of, what do you like of her? Don't like her?
She reminds me of something. I'm not sure.
Well, that helps. That helps. That's a sense of tradition. That's part of the tetrad. You know, if you remind people of something, that's what they say. Charisma. Now, this is a new idea. McLuhan said charisma is looking like a lot of other people. Yes. Now, most people don't think that's what charisma is. They think you shine individually and you're unique, and then you get charisma. Mm-hmm. But looking like a lot of other people, I just realized, no, you look like a lot of different people from all eras of history. You retrieve everybody.
Yes.
Rather than just thinking that you look a lot of like people today, you look a lot of from way back or way forward. I've expanded my notion of that concept.
It may mean you look like a lot of things people like.
Yes. McLuhan does go on to say that, you know, you have to look like people that you like to meet, that you like to get to know. That's charisma. At least that was in the 1560s. Now, but that's a long time ago. That doesn't apply now. Now you purposely look like someone that people wouldn't want to meet to get any traction.
Yeah.
To get psychopathic.
Yeah, Lady Gaga.
Yeah, or anybody. And Nicole. Or Obama. Look how Obama upped his negativity once he became president. He immediately went into being the worst president that ever happened. He did it on purpose to create his charisma.
Good for him.
Okay, Madeline. She goes, yes, Diana Krall. That was pretty sultry. Yeah. We should maybe play, what do you think, Madeline, should we play a little bit again? You want to hear a little of the beginning of it? What do you think?
Yeah.
Use up a couple minutes, you know. We'll have to talk to Michael, but if not, we'll have to talk to Michael.
I have a Bob Dylan story to tell when you want to hear it.
All right, let's begin this. Ooh, that hurt. Sorry I had to do that. So, Madeline, go look up Diana Krall if you have a computer or whatever you need on YouTube, K-R-A-L-L.
What do you mean if you have a computer? She's on computer listening to Tube Radio.
Well, you assume she's from this world and all that. You know,
right.
You
mm-hmm.
see, you took assumptions there. You fell for that.
Yeah.
But the lesson learned.
She's got a beautiful voice, Bob.
Yeah, but I'm saying go look at her YouTube, Madeline. That she's really fun to watch. Her fingers on the piano are very slippery. Very interesting to watch her. And she's pretty, but she has a bit of a small-town Canadian girl look.
Yeah, she never got her braces on her teeth soon enough.
Oh, you've looked at it?
Yeah.
Is that what it is? She's got a bit of punchy street-level teeth?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Yeah, well, that's good because people are so neurotic now that every kid has their braces, which is really sad.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we got to get some play done here. Enough of this work. Let's get some play done. So I'm going to go back up here. There was a message from Lee. What did Lee say? Lee from British Columbia, Canada. I think that's Lee who's been on a lot of the health calls. Hey, Bob, glad to finally tune into your show. Great fun. Love your tunes. Must pick a good day to come in and find me or experience it. Enjoying the archives, too. But nothing like real timing. Cheers and hello to Carolyn. And then someone that was Lee, I think that, you know, when Tracy said Edison's best line was, he wished he had paid more attention to Tesla. I keep thinking I said that. Starting to come back that I said that. So,
of course you did.
Yeah, so, okay, back down to the bottom. We got to talk about telepathy. Oh, no. We got to talk about the songs. Okay, in the previous hour, we heard Paul Butterfield at the beginning, famous blues band in the 60s. There's a picture of Paul Butterfield on the cover of Freak Out, Zappa's first album, 66, the glorious year of 66. Zappa said he was always frozen, and he was frozen in 1966. That's just before Rai returned to essence, so he was acting out the Rai principle. He stayed before Rai returned to essence, so he could be the individualist great composer, the make you feel less than kind of position, and just by his brilliance, not that you have to, but often that's the unforeseen effect. So back at 66, what was I saying? So Paul Butterfield, he knew to hang out with Frank, and he popularized a lot of the blues mania that the baby boomers were getting into. He was like rode on the first wave of kids discovering blues. And he was born in 1942, died in 1987, 45 years old. 45, he died of drug-related heart failure. But he made the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Famous harmonica player. Okay, that's Butterfield. Then the second piece was Chico Hamilton. Now, Chico's interesting because he is an American jazz drummer and band leader, but he was born in 1921. And he's still around. He's like me. He's in his 90s. And we have a picture of him as recently as 2007, appearing at Tompkins Square Park in New York City. I've been to Tompkins Square Park. That's where the squatters had a lot of riots in 1988 in New York City. So that was Chico Hamilton, and it was called Maud Blues. I better check that. What was that song called? Did I say what Paul Butterfield's song title was?
I don't think so.
Yeah, Walking Blues. Chico is For Mods Only, M-O-D-S, For Mods Only. Then we played The Seeds, and their song about Mr. Farmer. That's The Seeds. They had some great songs back in 66. And I want to read the lyrics of the Farmer, or Mr. Farmer. So this is in 1966 or so, this song is happening. See the farmer on the other side of town. He's always working hard till the sun goes down. He's up every morning right on five, wanting green seeds just to come alive. But he don't wear no farm clothes. He's always using a rake and a hoe. But his seeds are starting to grow like a big stalk up through the sky. He used to live in an apartment in a big old city with thick and priestly windows built right in it. And he decided to move to a little tiny town. He wanted to be a farmer all year round and on a country road where you can't see a thing. He's got 5 acres filled with little green things, he said. He's working so hard all day and night. Mr. Farmer, let me watch your crops. Let me watch your crops. Let me water your crops. Let me harvest your crops. I want to have a dream come true. I said, farmer, 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 I want to be just like you. So this is reflecting the baby boomer trend of hippies wanting to go to the country and start a farm. Yes, Michael.
All through university, my name used to be, my nickname was Farmer.
Why?
Why? Because I came from farming. My stepfather was a chicken farmer.
Oh.
And so I came with a reputation of coming, having lived on farms, which I did. So if just listening to that lyric, it's quite a synchronistic lyric because it's a story about me.
Great. No, that's good. And you know, in North America back then, if they wanted to insult somebody, they called them a farmer. You, farmer. Remember that, Carol? They used to insult people. Did you have that in your culture?
Well, that's probably why I dropped the nickname, or I let go of it as soon as I could get out that environment.
Right.
It didn't have great connotations.
Yeah, in general, since technology was going to make the whole world become one global magnetic city, going to nature, dropping and going to nature was a futile enterprise. So in the long run, your general drift of your life, you would have to drop farmer because the urban would take over, and that had a bad connotation. But for a moment there, in the late 60s, it was good to be a farmer. And so the last paragraph says, see the farmer walking downtown, always draws a crowd when he's around. He's always wearing seedy clothes. He shows them off wherever he goes. You can spot him anywhere. Got a bright pink thumb, but he don't care. I said he looks like something from a very bad dream. And of course.
Now, were these words sung into our ears? I didn't hear one of those words.
I know. Well, you weren't listening. You're reading and typing and doing other things. But the point is that the production of the YouTube, it was a bit low, the words. It was hard to make out the words.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I think, a TV show. So it's not top quality. Back then, a TV show. Mr. Farmer, let me watch your crops. Let me water your crops. Let me harvest your crops. Let me save your crops. So he's presenting the farmer as a charismatic figure. Now, you know what Zappa did? 2 years later, in 1968, he had himself photographed with farmer overalls on, and had that on the back of his Uncle Meat album. He was pretending he was a farmer, but because he was playing off the image of popularity of that image at that point. Anyways, enough of that pattern. This is more to talk. I apologize, but it's sometimes interesting to some people. So what did we play next? No, we did that, the Seeds. So that was the Seeds. We've talked about them before. Now we come to this hour, Diana Krall. We talked about her. And then we played Baker, these guys, Bruce, Baker, and Moore. And they're the name of a short-lived power trio formed in 1993 by the long-established artist, bassist Jack Bruce of, were they Cream? I think they were Cream. Drummer Ginger Baker of Cream and guitarist Gary Moore. Guitarist Gary Moore is a new guy. They released just one album, Around the Next Dream. How's that follow from Bad Dream and the Farmer Song, word-wise? This is an ongoing, like, poem we've had the last 2 minutes. And it reached number 9 in the charts in summer 94, but spent only 4 weeks. Did well by Gary Moore, the new guy, not the Cream guys. And they went on a short tour, and then they disbanded. And so what we heard was their song, City of Gold, from their only album, and then they played the Cream song, I Feel Free, which is a good song. So that was that. So, man, what's next? Let's see what we got here. Madeline told us to play Diana Krall again. She was for that, but I started playing it before I saw that. Okay, Michael, let's talk about telepathy. All right?
All right.
You ready? You ready?
Now, here's what... talk.
Good point. Very good. Very good point. But that may be within the limited notions of what telepathy is.
Okay.
I read Counterblast, McLuhan's new book in book of 1969. When I read that in 1969, he said that ESP is mental gesture, nonverbal mental gesture. I thought that was a great combination, sparked off a whole bunch of new thinkings, nonverbal mental gesture. So if you meet somebody and they make a gesture, that communicates to you. There's thoughts, there's intention, there's all kinds of stuff that goes into the gesture. It's nonverbal.
Yeah, you're not saying it, but you're just leaning in that direction.
Not necessarily. It could be a violent gesture. The point is, yes, if it's a subtle gesture, as a matter of fact, this person's talking, you'd be looking, the ESP is coming through the body language.
See, so yeah, but ESP, you don't have to lean only with the body. You can lean with your thoughts. You can lean with your speaking, and you're not saying it, but you're leaning in that direction, the gesture.
So you're saying ESP is leaning.
Yes, but not. It's the person is leaning in a particular direction, and you picking that up.
Right, and so what is the? You know, we had I think it was Michael from Tucson last week. He was saying we're moving into a world of telepathy. Now, aren't the kids growing up with telepathy once TV came in? Because you're watching body language, especially as the decades unfolded. You got an incredible number of YouTubes or videos of people watching, analyzing, and picking up body language. So we may have reached the pinnacle of ESP with MTV over the last 20 years. Now, other people would say, no.
How would you describe telepathy, Bob? What would you define it as?
Well, I did an essay called Cloning ESP in 1999, and it actually was commented this week. So
yes,
I can click.
Look at this.
Was it you who commented on it?
No, I don't think I commented, but I did read through it, yes.
Okay, so I've just brought... This was written 22 or so years ago. And is that you banging things? Watch your mute. Don't bang things so much. It comes through very loud. All right? Okay, you're muted. If you want to speak, then you unmute. But this essay is me dealing with this issue of what is ESP. So I call it cloning ESP. I start off, there's no problem understanding another or another person, if we speak the same verbal language. It's what my next move is going to be, whether verbal, gestural, or indifferent, that is of interest to the other person who just spoke to me. And therein is the drama, of cognition. For both of us, because I have to expect a response to my response from the other, even if we don't speak the same language, there will still be this drama of response. And my response may satisfy what the other's foreign words requested. Later, circumstances unfold that reveal a problem in what we thought we communicated in either case. In retrospect, we will wonder how the previous exchange failed to declare the unforeseen problem. This is the first rhythm of consciousness, of thought, of memory, of the subliminal, of the consequences of extrasensory perception. This is the drama enacted in the Mutt and Jute section of Finnegan's Wake, which is page 16 to 18, the first dialogue in the book. Quote, put book in quotes, because it's not really just a book. And shortly after, James Joyce writes on page 18, in the ignorance that implies impression, that knits knowledge, that finds the name form, that whets the wits, that convey contacts, that sweetens sensation, that drives desire, that adheres to attachment, that dogs death, that bitches birth, that entails the ensuance of existentiality. End of quote. I then said the implied impression, because the first words were in the ignorance that implies impression, that knits knowledge. The implied impression is ESP, is it not? And the ignorance is the assumption that a connection has been made. The next 10 clauses or stages that Joyce lays out that I read are the automatic archetypal consequences of this environment of perception. All of subsequent cultural production and residue proceeds from that original drama, of cognition, however rudimentary the utterance. So, you can come back on now, Michael. Do you have any thoughts about that? That's an attempt to begin to define ESP.
It is. I mean, a lot of it I get but can't really talk back to you. But in your first sentence there is you actually describe what I was saying about the person leaning into something. If you just read your first sentence about the person's, just if you read that again, the very first sentence.
Right. There's no problem understanding another if we speak the same verbal language. It's what my next move is going to be. There's the leaning. Whether verbal, gestural, or indifferent, that is of interest to the other who just spoke to me. And therein is the drama of cognition. Now, ESP for many people involves moving things, right, with their mind, or just moving things without touching them. My ESP is, the ESP I'm talking about here is not that, is it? It's a bit limited.
No.
It's not including, it's not really a world of telepathy. What people want is a world of telekinesis. They want to be able to move things with their mind.
Yeah, that's a party trick kind of thing approach to it.
Yeah, so, you know, moving things, what other kinds of, what other ESP tricks are there? Moving things, bending things, seeing things ahead of time and making them happen or cutting them off. So you start to expand on it. But my ESP, my term ESP is a big term that includes all that. But the most important ESP is your interaction with another person. That's the be-all and end-all of life. You can do all this moving and mutating things, but you're interested in how the other reacts to it. So
yeah,
that's
and,
that's, why
and the ESP is also all the communication going on between the two that's non-verbal or obvious, but very plain to see by the part of us that's watching it.
Yeah, and when people develop relationships, that's where the real communication and the judging of what's going on is happening. It's what McLuhan called the gap is where the action is. It's when people aren't talking. They do this in movies or TV shows, you know. The character has a problem, and the other one, pretty quickly, the other sitcom person can sort of eventually notice that their body expression, there's something going on, you know, and they say, what's wrong with you? And that's the... That kind of intimacy is the core of being a human. And I had another thought. Forget it now. So I think that's a pretty neat statement by James Joyce. In the ignorance that implies impression, that knits knowledge, that finds the name form, that whets the wits, that convey contacts, that sweeten sensation, that drives desire, that adheres to attachment, that dogs death, that bitches birth that entails the ensuance of existentiality. That's the getting involved. That's the what the Buddhists say, you know, or Hindus say, getting involved in Maya. You get down a rabbit hole of involvement in your sensory impressions.
Yeah. Sucked
so
in by synchronicity.
So how does the presence process relate to this?
The presence process is really directly about tuning into your own felt sense of what is going on, your intuitive felt sense, as opposed to looking at the outside, although using the outside as a mirror, the story as a guidepost to it, and then getting right to a causal felt sense, like the person with the yeast problem who called in. If I was working with him, I would say there's three things going on with you. There's a physical thing going on, there's a mental thing going on, and there's a felt, very deeply felt thing going on. The physical thing is the symptoms you're seeing. The mental thing is all the stories you're telling about it. But deeply, if you want to go closer to the truth of what's happening with you, you go to that felt sense. Not that you have to trust it or understand it. You just be with that uncomfortable feeling that arises when you know this infection has come back. That feeling to me is more causal than anything else. And if you actually just go and be with that and allow it to be there and just sit and watch it, it knows what to do. It goes through a course of unfolding or whatever. And on the other side of that comes insight about the yeast, you know, the mental and then the physical adjustment of your body to the fact that you've integrated this causal thing. So, so that would be my take.
What the heck? Let's delete that.
Well, that's like a total biology approach.
Well, I maybe wasn't paying close enough attention. What was the basic point you were saying? Carol, do you know?
Okay, let me turn this off.
I was saying your ESP, my connection with ESP in the presence process was your felt perception. Was your connection to your ESP about what's going on with yourself? And so if you get in tune with that, that will show you, it'll get you to look inwards at yourself rather than at the reflections of what's going on with you in the world. And that was just the basic. So in a way, it was developing your own ESP of talking to yourself and listening.
So Michael, that's what Ian calls tuning into the distance between you and you. That's the what you're talking about, that part.
Yes. That's a great way to describe it.
Yeah, the distance between you and you. I was thinking that I was sitting with a bunch of people in London with Robert of Tottenham at a cafe in 2008, and we're sitting around, and somebody started talking about living in the present or in the now, and I said, well, there is no present. And the person goes, they were shocked, and he said, holy crap, I never thought of that. And they immediately texted or called their lover to say, hey, there is no present. There's no now. And that was a big one for her. But that's, you know, that in my McLuhan essay, I go into it's hard to determine what the now is with so much electronic information communicating and filling up a now. But what do you make of that idea, that there is no present? You're teaching people how to tune into the present, but what about the next level? There is no present.
Yeah, we see also, I've seen that to have a now, you have to kind of triangulate that by having a past and a future. And so on that level, it doesn't work at all. And so one has to kind of go beyond trying to describe it. It's just this very big thing we're in.
Yeah.
So you just tune into yourself and wherever yourself happens to be. And
that's too selfish.
Let me run over
how
here.
Do you know what yourself is? You know, how about tuning into another person? They might be yourself.
And with the total biology approach,
there's no formula. There's no formula for it, actually. So.
There is a formula. I will tell you the formula in a minute, but go ahead, Carol.
Yeah, the total biology that I was getting at, what you'd say to someone is just realize that your body's not stupid. And it's doing what it's doing for a reason. And so what you're talking about, Michael, getting into your ESP, you know what's deep down or outside or up there, why something is happening. Your body is creating this something as a reason or in order to solve the problem, it's creating this reason of your physical symptoms.
What's that got to do with ESP?
You kind of know that. Once I say to someone, well, your body's not stupid, it's doing something for a reason, then they say, oh, yeah. And then they start coming up with, oh, it could be this, it could be that.
Maybe ESP, it's social work. Hold on, Michael, just a minute. ESP is a social communication, not internal gauging.
Social with who?
With other people, with mortar, with language, with artifacts. That's what ESP is involved with. It's the essence of mortar. A bunch of people come together. If they start thinking they're on the same page,
yeah,
that's how you start getting social delusion and people start losing their power.
Yeah.
You know, if they remain isolated and have their word power, you know, like ancient cavemen going around isolated, that they're not involved with ESP and social mortar. I'm taking ESP that way. Well, you're talking about some other thing, about tuning in, more like a knowing about yourself.
To yourself. That's where the self is.
Yeah, but it also assists in engaging with others in a different way. So if I'm around people that don't enjoy engaging with themselves, they're not usually that much fun to engage with. So in terms of the contrast, like Carolyn was talking about, the contrast, it doesn't come to hurt us, it comes to reveal that we are already hurting. And that's kind of a role of some of the contrast we have in situations like that. And the ESP that I'm talking about is the ability to recognize that and engage with it, rather than engaging with its reflections. And then when we can learn to recognize, engage with that part of our own experience, our interaction with other people transforms in some way. So it's so that's all I was saying.
Yeah, but I'm saying that cloning of ESP, I say electronics is the cloning of ESP. That's social stuff. Can you clone your knower? I'm taking what you guys are talking about, your disbelief in you, your knowing of yourself and your health. How could you clone that?
Well, for me, the knower is, you see, if I'd had the vocabulary back then, I may have called it the non-physical process. So for me, the knower is kind of the non-physical, and when I'm talking about engaging with this inner, I'm talking about developing a conversation with the non-physical that knows everything, and rather go to that rather than making the stories up and reacting to reflections about it in the world.
Okay, so Sean's Shane is here. Come on in, Shane. You want to say something?
Yes. Hi, Bob. Hi, Carolyn. Hi, Michael.
How you doing?
Hey, Shane.
Well, I really enjoyed that quote from Joyce. And, Bob, did you say that personal interaction is the essence of ESP?
Yes, I'm saying it's a social thing. I'm saying, what was I saying? Personal, the subtleties... they show this in movies, you know, when someone's got a problem and they come home, the mate always knows they have a problem. At least they write the script that way. But they're showing that people can tell things. Their body is emanating where they're at or what's going on more than their words. And maybe it's their facial expressions. I'm saying the essence of social, the more valuable part of a relationship is the ESP part.
I like
yes,
that.
Yes.
I would say to that I listen to what's not being said more than I listen to what's being said sometimes.
Right, doesn't what's not being said is communicated immediately among people who've been together a long time.
Yes,
you don't
absolutely.
Have to wait for it. It comes immediately. Now, what I do, since I've been with Carolyn for so many years, and also we're in the same proximity all the time, I know that she's feeling, whatever I'm doing, she doesn't have to look at me. She might be reading, but she's feeling everything and communicating and picking up stuff. So I will purposely play little rhythm tricks. I will play tricks with my vibration. Which will make her laugh. And she immediately recognized, that's a new one. I haven't seen that wrinkle before. Right, Carol? We've never really publicly said this before, but that's the essence of fun living with Bob, because he's always playing with the ESP, right, Carol?
So you kind of emote or imagine or shift your own feeling place and flip it around, and that is communicated. Is that what you're saying?
Basically, what happens is, I will say a tone, I'll use a tone of voice that I know I've never used before. And Carol will immediately recognize, I've never heard that tone before. She immediately knows, right? That's a new one. And they come, they might not show up only once every 6 months, right? It's not often, but suddenly a new one happens. And that's what I say, think of, and more. You know, ready for, ready, happy where you are, ready for more. There's a more, that's how I understand moreness. There's always a new wrinkle in a couple of intimacy, of communication, that happens. And if you're sensitive, if she's able to pick it up, that's good. You know, that means she's in tune. We're still on the same, we're jogging along at the same pace. Did you notice? Okay,
go ahead.
I need to digress for a second. I had an interesting experience. What much time? Okay, we'll continue this the next hour, but I only got 5 minutes. This medium is, people can go on, let me watch this or these other channels that have archives of shows, many episodes, many seasons. So you spend a weekend watching, you know, 10 hours of stuff. It's better than watching a movie, and maybe people have more time. Well, this past weekend, Netflix did the first commercialization or the first actualization of that. They released a new TV show called House of Cards on February 1st, 13 episodes, and they were all available immediately. You didn't wait 13 weeks. See, they know. I think they got praised in the trade papers for it's a neat idea. They know people are doing this, going to let me watch this and watching hours. So they said, well, we're going to make this whole series and then dump it so that you can have a long weekend watching it all. And I did that. In the very last scene, well, you haven't seen the end of it, have you, Carolyn?
Oh, yeah. The first, I saw it.
Yeah, you saw the whole thing, too. The very last scene shows the main couple jogging together. Mm-hmm. Now, did you notice the last second they had him start jogging a bit ahead of her?
Yeah.
What did that communicate to you?
Well, I just thought it was the shot. They wanted to get them both their faces in the shot. So
no, they go past her face and they focus on his face, and then the scene ends. And it's like he moved ahead. To me, they were showing that he's a competitive guy. You know what I mean? And he's very competitive, and he even competes with his wife.
Yeah.
And so he kind of just jogged just slightly ahead of her.
Well, as a male, you would say that.
That's the ESP right there, Bob.
Yes, that was the ESP, and my ESP, their ESP, the script ESP. A lot of ESP went on that last scene.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so I just want to digress, so that's what I thought. So back to, what were you saying, somebody, Shane? You want to say something?
Yeah, well, it reminds me of the way I've often kind of felt people, I suppose, is through, for example, the way they walk or close a door or move into a room and sit down, or you know, the emotional noises that they make. You know, there's so many things that we use to whether we're aware of it or not, but we are always communicating with our bodies, and with the sort of energy that we use to move our bodies around. And the kind of color that leaves, it kind of leaves a trail, I reckon. And I don't know if that's me using ESP to observe it. I've never thought about it as ESP. I've just always, it kind of felt it and sensed it in others.
I just realized, in Aristotle's Cause, efficient causality is doing something for a purpose, a tool to build something. Formal causality is watching the effects of what's built on the people around you. I'm talking about formal causality with an ESP. Efficient causality will be, I can move that coach over to the next house by ESP, by telekinesis. That's efficient causality, ESP. Formal causality is, I see what the neighbor feels like when they come back after they've got the floating coach, they come in my house, and then I suss out what the effect on them was of that efficient action. See, so I'm talking about formal causality in ESP. That's you know what I mean? The effects on the human. That's the core point. Everything is done to see what the other makes of what you're doing.
So, Bob, how would you see MIME in relation to ESP?
That's mental gesture. Mime, Aristotle said mimesis is how we learn. So miming is another term for the basic act of cognition. And so people that didn't have language, they were miming to each other as they watched each other react to the hunt, or to the, if they're super beings, swimming with the dolphins, or fucking the dolphins. You know what I mean? What am I saying? What was the issue here?
Mime.
Yeah, mime. Mime is normal communication.
Mm-hmm. So mime artist isn't playing on the audience's ESP very much, would you say, or is?
A mime?
A mime artist, are they playing on their audience's ESP in your terms of the word ESP, or not really?
They are making the ESP visual. It's like the beginning of an alphabetic society. They're making it, they're forgetting about the music. They want you to watch the language of gesture. They're forgetting about the sound effects, the sound thing. Now, dancing probably comes before mime.
Mime's a bit more cartoon-like, less natural. It's kind of heightened or exaggerated.
It's an extension. It's a specialization of the ESP. It's highlighting the visual part of ESP, not social ESP, not the official Gazelle, but formal. Something like that, but it's a very good topic.
Mm. When did you write that essay, Bob, the cloning ESP one?
Bob is gone. It's just you and I, Shane. How are you doing?
Oh.
Okay. I just get knocked off, but okay, we've got 1 second. We're back in a few minutes, and we'll continue this topic. It's a very good topic.
There's only now, but that now includes all.